The Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to the show. Yes, this is The Weekly Connect, the programme for you if you're blind or partially sighted. Good to have your company this week. I'm Stephen Scott, and this week is a bit of a special episode focusing on the work of volunteers. Yes, we'll be hearing from sighted, blind and partially sighted people from all across the UK who are giving their time to a wide range of activities. And yes, the general election is over. Well, for now at least. We get reaction from RNIB on the results. We talk about the issues that the charity is keen to discuss with the new parliament. And we ask, how accessible was that election? That's all coming up.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
Yes, hello, welcome to it again. And this week on the show, we are talking about the subject of volunteering. It's our theme this week. We said last week we would do it because, of course, it was National Volunteer Week last week. And we wanted to say thank you to all of the people out there who are volunteering in so many different ways. And one of the myths we were keen to blow away with all of this was that a lot of those people out there volunteering were in fact blind and partially sighted as well. You know, this idea that, you know, it's only sighted people that will help blind and partially sighted people is just nonsense. There's lots of blind people out there helping in one way or another, and we're going to hear from some of those people this very hour. And we do want to say thank you. We also want to say to those out there who are blind or partially sighted who think that volunteering could be for them, or perhaps never thought it would be for them, that this might change your view. We're going to kick things off with Danielle Colcom, our community facilitator and reporter. She's been talking to a number of people this week, and in particular, we are going to hear from Tony, who kicks things off, to tell us about why he got involved in volunteering.
Hi everyone, I'm joined here today with Tony. He's one of our volunteer campaigns coordinators and also volunteer assistant, is that right?
Campaigns assistant.
So you've got many roles within RNIB. So can I just start by asking you what kind of attracted you to volunteer with RNIB?
I went to an open day at Bolton Science for Blind People, and Lindsay was there with an RNIB stall, and I just made some general inquiries. I was looking for things to occupy myself with, and Lindsay happened to be there on that particular open day.
Just so everyone is aware, Lindsay's actually one of our campaign managers, isn't she, for the North West? Yeah. So was there anything about campaigning in particular that stood out to you?
It was just getting involved. I looked at several different roles, including getting into IT roles, helping people out with their home technology and computers, as well as doing like campaigning and other things. I'd been helping out at Bolton Science for Blind People for like 2 years as a general office person, doing mail shots and things like that, and it just seemed a logical progression. When Lindsay turned up, I said, this sounds a little bit more interesting.
So you're involved with your local blind society as well. So
I was. So that's dropped off quite considerably. I'm still in touch with them by email, but I don't go on a regular basis to their meetings anymore.
What would you say you gained from your time at the blind society and the volunteer roles you had there?
It made me more confident to come out and just meet other blind people. I'd gone through a quite severe depression where I was sitting at home and doing absolutely nothing and just getting more and more depressed. So going to the Blind Society was the first step in getting me out of the house. And it progressed slowly but surely from there.
So it sounds like you went through a bit of a difficult patch then, first of all.
I went through quite a difficult patch for a couple of years, yeah.
And so with that in mind, how would you say that things have changed for you now that you are involved in things like campaigning and other voluntary roles?
It's made me a much more relaxed person. I find it easier to talk to people now. I was quite withdrawn at one stage and wouldn't talk to anybody almost.
So you've definitely come out of your shell a bit, would you say?
Yeah.
And so, other than gaining a bit of confidence, is there anything else to be gained from volunteering?
You're learning new skills. I've learned through doing the volunteering roles, I've learned how to touch type. I've learned how to use different software, particularly learned how to ZoomText and Supernova. I'm reasonably confident on using most of the voice and magnification software. I've passed that knowledge on wherever I can to other people.
Yeah, and I feel that's a really important part of getting involved in organisations and giving your time, isn't it? Is sharing your skills.
Sharing the information and skills.
Yeah.
And it's quite fulfilling sometimes just to get other people involved and doing things nationally. It's quite a large area to cover on the whole of the Northwest. But every person we can get involved on a campaign issue or to come and meet and learn something new on a regional meetings or a learning event, volunteers days, open days. If the more people are getting involved, the more people we'll have that we can call upon to help with campaigns and training and teaching other people.
So power by numbers, essentially.
Yeah.
The more of us that come together, the stronger our voices.
The stronger the voices, the more likely it is someone is going to actually listen to what's being said.
Do you feel that that's one of the things you get from volunteering? Is that an achievement for yourself?
Yeah. If I go back 10 years ago, I would never have thought of writing to my MP and asking a question of them and saying, why is this happening? I would never have done it.
Well, I need to take this opportunity to thank you personally for, you know, the commitment and contribution that you make to volunteering, because I know RNIB just couldn't exist as it is without the work of its volunteers. And so to celebrate Volunteer Week, we really, I want to take that opportunity to make sure that volunteering is acknowledged as being really integral to the organisation. So what difference do you think that you make? So under that theme of what difference do we make, what personally do you feel that you make as in terms of a difference to either the sector or the organisation or an individual?
I've been make a great difference into the actual focus Lindsay can make on her campaign issues. I take away a lot of the day-to-day items and research that she needs to do, and just give her the information. It's already done for her. She's got far better use of her time then, rather than just looking up little pieces of information and finding out who's were and who to talk to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've already done that background information for her. She's well pleased with the amount of time she can concentrate then on the actual campaign issues themselves, rather than having to spend lots and lots of time looking up all the background information before she has a meeting with anybody.
Mm. So you're really, what you're doing is making sure that all the legwork's done, essentially, aren't you?
Yeah. I get a lot of the legwork done. I arrange for venues, for meetings, for training days we have out in the Northwest. The VCC conferences we have twice a year. I'll find a venue and arrange dates and times, and it's all done and dusted, and I'll just communicate that to everybody that's we need to invite.
Mm. Great organisation skills, it sounds. Tony, I just wanted to end with a quick question around, if there's someone out there listening thinking, I'm a bit apprehensive about volunteering, I'm not sure how to get involved, and I don't think I've got anything to offer, what would you say to that person?
I would say, don't think like that. Come and join in, because you'll gain an awful lot just by joining in, and you'll find something that you can do. You might not find the right thing initially, but there's plenty of opportunities. There's plenty of volunteer roles out there that people can explore and try out.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks to Tony there, talking to Danielle Colcom. And that's what it's all about this hour. We're learning about the different ways that people are volunteering across the UK in a manner of different ways, and proving that point that, you know, blind and partially sighted people like you and I can actually go out there and volunteer as well, volunteer our time to do things and help others. Next up, we hear from Nadia. Nadia is about to start volunteering with RNIB, and she's been talking to Ashley Venables, another of our community facilitators here at the charity.
I'm hoping to start doing public speaking events to help raise money for the Talking Books service and the RNIB in general.
Okay. Have you had much interaction with RNIB in the past?
I've been blind since birth, so I've dealt with the RNIB on and off all my life.
Okay. And what services have you interacted with RNIB?
Talking Books.
Yep.
And I have quite a few of the specialist products to help around the home. And they've also given me sort of general advice in the past as well with regard to benefits and employment and that kind of thing.
You're here for the volunteer thank you today and the public speaking. Have you had much involvement so far, or is this the first steps to your volunteering journey with RNIB?
I've never volunteered with the RNIB before, but I have had public speaking experience, as well as experience raising visual impairment awareness. So,
And you said a little bit about what inspires you as to the role with the volunteering. Was there anything that you want to do with volunteering that maybe isn't offered at the moment, or any aspirations for your role?
I hope that there's nothing I think that I would want to do that isn't done now, but I hope that I would really like to try and improve sighted people's perception of visually impaired people, maybe get them to realise that we are actually human beings, not aliens from another planet, and just improve the way we are treated generally by the public.
And do you think that's one of the most important things to you with your volunteering role, sort of taking
yes.
that forward?
Yes. If people can see firsthand how the RNIB can help someone with a visual impairment, I think they'll be much more likely to help than they will just from a sighted person saying this is what we do, but we haven't actually got anyone to show you the benefits of what we do. So I think
that's good. And what would you say to others that are looking for volunteering roles, or what was the best sort of easiest steps for you to get into doing it? Did you link in with RNIB through the website, or was it through sort of word of mouth?
It was Action for Blind People before they amalgamated with the RNIB who told me about the voluntary work that the RNIB did, and I thought it would be a good step, kind of a compromise between maybe to lead on to paid work possibly.
Okay.
I thought voluntary work might be, I have other health problems, so I thought voluntary work might be a good way to test the waters to see what I was physically actually capable of doing before considering taking it further to do paid work.
Okay, that's fantastic. On a side note, have you heard of RNIB Connect?
Yes, I'm a member.
Are you a member of it? So how do you engage with us at the moment with Connect? Is it just via the magazine, or do you listen to the radio?
I listen to the radio constantly.
Okay, fantastic.
So that's on pretty much all the time.
What are your favourite shows on there?
Oh, Tech Talk is fantastic.
Okay.
The Weekly Connect is great. I've been on the discussion boards a couple of times, but generally I like the radio station and the magazine. So,
is there anything that you'd like to see on the Weekly Connect that isn't featured at the moment?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a really good show. I wish maybe that the radio station did more, in general, I mean, did more talk programmes, because, you know, there are a lot of music programmes as well. I personally would prefer it if it was a talk station completely, but that's just me.
Yeah.
Because you can get music on any station, you know, and I never tune in to the RNIB's music programme because there's always another station that's playing the same thing. So I only ever switch on for their, if you like, talking programmes, so...
Hey, Nadia, there's nothing wrong with a bit of music every so often. That's what a lot of our listeners tell us. You know, that's one of those things, isn't it, with music? It's such a divisive topic. Some people love it, some people hate it, and I love country music, so I don't know where I sit in all of this. Anyway, thank you for your comments, Nadia. We appreciate them. This is the show where you can talk about anything you want to talk about. If you have a view on something, you want to share it, email us and tell us, theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. If you've got that burning issue that you need to get off your chest, then stick it in an email, get in touch with us, and you could be on this programme next week. Now, let's continue our thread this week of saying thank you to our volunteers, and just thank you to volunteers in general for all the wonderful work that goes on. You know, when you pick up a talking book from the mats that's perhaps dropped onto, or perhaps you download it onto your phone using RNIB Overdrive or Audible or whatever, however you get your audiobooks, you maybe don't think about the voices behind those books. Well, we're now going to hear from John Palmer, who is a volunteer at RNIB's Talking Book Service.
This is Jill Cowsell. I'm sitting with John Palmer, who's one of our volunteers here in Ivy Bridge. John, do you want to tell us a little bit about what you do here at Ivy Bridge?
Well, I come in usually once every fortnight. I live quite a way away, about an hour's journey away in Okehampton. And so rather than just to like 1 hour and a half or so a week, I come in usually from about 10:30 to 3:30 and then basically record whatever people ask me to do.
Lovely, thank you. You've been doing this for quite a long time, haven't you?
Well, I'm not sure exactly how long. I was wondering that the other day. It was maybe 8 years, is it?
Probably yes. Nine?
I'm not quite sure. I remember you told me a while ago that I'd done 5 years, and that was quite a time ago, so I guess it must be about 8 years now.
Yes, thank you. So you actually come into the recording studio, which is where we are now, and record books. You must have a favourite.
Well, yeah, funnily enough, the two most favourite books are the last two I've done. I love recording novels, and I love recording them where there are lots of characters, people who you can really get into, and ideally with lots of different characters in the book. And so the one I'm doing now is a book called by an author I'd never heard of, called Leslie Thomas, and it's The Adventures of Goodnight and Loving. All right, and it's about this ordinary guy who's living a very boring life in London, travelling on the train, middle class, lawyer. And he just gets sick to death with it, falls out with his wife, and then goes off travelling all around the world and gets into all these adventures. I haven't quite finished it yet, so I'm dying to know what happens. I don't know if you want another one before that, which is also probably the second best one. It's called, and totally different, it's called The Nuremberg Enigma by Eve Bonavero. And it tells the story of what possibly happened to Hitler, because there's a bit of a mystery when Hitler died in the bunker, whether he actually was there or not. And it explores that and all the implications of what might have happened if he perhaps didn't die.
Lovely, thank you. What do you think you get from volunteering?
For me, personally, I just love reading aloud and acting. I really love it. And do you know, I'm not a very good actor because I always get hung up on learning words. And there's always that little bit inside me which is stopping me get really into the character when I'm on stage, because I'm worried, what's the next line? Am I going to wear it? And you can't do that. If you're really going to be a good actor, you've got to be able to totally forget the words and just be there. And the nice thing about reading is that the words are there in front of you. And I'm fortunate in being able to sort of pick it up quickly and read quickly and absorb it quickly, so I don't have a hassle with that. Yeah, so that's really why they get it from personal view. And the other thing is that it's nice to be able to do something. I've been very fortunate in my life. You know, I've been, touch wood, reasonably healthy. I've had a good job. I've had a happy family and blah, blah, blah. And it's just a little way of putting something back into society, if you like.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Sean. That's just lovely. We love having you on the team. Thank you.
Thanks for everything you do, John. Appreciate it. This is The Weekly Connect here on RNIB Connect Radio. Don't forget the podcast is always available on Audioboom and iTunes. You can catch it there and listen anytime you like. There's two flavours of the podcast. You've got the Weekly Connect episodes and you've got the features version as well. And that means that you can listen to individual bits of the show if you want to. So maybe you're on this week's show and you want to listen to it again. Well, head to the website, head to your app on your phone, whether it's the podcast podcast app on your smartphone, or it's the iTunes or Audioboom web pages online. That's where you'll find the Weekly Connect. If you want to find it online, easy to find, search the Weekly Connect, RNIB. We're saying thank you this week to our volunteers, and we're now going to hear from Lisa, who has played a very important part in RNIB's volunteer counselling service. She's been talking to RNIB Northern Ireland's Kirsty Campbell.
My name's Lisa. I'm a volunteer counsellor with the Looking Forward project, and I've been with the project from the very start, so almost 4 years now.
Can you tell me maybe why or how you got into volunteering with Looking Forward?
For me, it appealed because I wanted to be able to offer a counselling service to clients who wouldn't normally avail of mainstream counselling, so that's what attracted me to the post.
Yeah. Would you have much experience with anybody with sight loss before this?
Absolutely none. Yeah. Absolutely none. No. I just thought it sounded an exciting project and something that was brand new and something that was very needed. But no, absolutely no experience before. So it was all new.
Yeah. Would you say you've learned a lot through it then?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I really have. I've enjoyed every minute of it. I've worked all over Northern Ireland, as far down as Enniskillen, Omagh. I've seen clients in Portadown, in Lurgan, in Dungannon, in Cookstown, in Belfast. So it's taken me all over Northern Ireland.
Do you think there's maybe any particular, without discussing anybody in particular, any particular different issues maybe with people who are experiencing sight loss or have experienced sight loss?
I think there's a theme of loss and grief. And I think there's also very often a loss of confidence and a loss in belief of their abilities. So that's a theme I would see from along a lot. I've seen clients understand that what they're experiencing is very usual, and giving them time and space to explore their feelings usually leads to their mood improving and an increase in confidence.
Why do you think projects like Looking Forward are important?
I think they're hugely important, not only because of the service we provide to blind and partially sighted clients, but also that it opens the conversation around the importance of emotional support if somebody has lost or is losing their sight. So I think it makes a real difference.
So what would you say are your hopes for people who have been involved with Looking Forward and going forward in the future now?
Oh, I hope that my clients continue to get involved in life and feel less isolated and maybe find new ways of doing things they used to do. So I hope that their confidence improves and they continue getting out and meeting people and having a full active life.
What are you going to take away yourself from your experience of volunteering with Looking Forward?
I think I've certainly gained more than I've given to the project, and I have a greater understanding of perhaps what it's like to be blind and partially sighted and live in a sighted world. I have less fear, so if I see somebody about to cross the road, I'll offer help where before I wouldn't. I'll definitely take away more than I've given. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Being a pleasure to be involved with it.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
And we'll continue saying thank you to our volunteers later this hour. But right now, let's turn to a subject that is pretty hard to avoid at the moment, and that is the general election that's just gone. Well, yes, one of many, it seems. We may be having another one soon, according to the pundits. Oh, really? Anyway, either way, we have what we call in this business a hung parliament, which basically means that a number of parties are going to have to get together, including the Tories, and it looks like the DUP are going to be getting together to form a government. Well, that's all well and good, but what does that mean for us as blind and partially sighted people? And what was the reaction to the election itself? Was it the most accessible election? Well, on the early edition, just after the election, Alan Russell, our host there, he sat down with Fazili Hadi and Hugh Huddy from RNIB to get their reactions on Election 17.
The really positive thing for us and anyone supporting disabled people is that the result gives us much more of an opportunity to have our issues listened to. We often find when we have a big majority, you know, and a party comes in and they feel very confident and actually they don't listen. So I think the first point to make to your listeners is that we think we'll get a better audience for some of the really big issues we have that we want to fight for disabled people, and particularly blind and partially sighted people, on. Just a very word of caution as well, because the UK government isn't responsible for everything in the UK anymore because of devolution in Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland, the results, again, aren't completely straightforward, because it doesn't necessarily mean that whatever the UK government wants happens across the UK. And then just one really good piece of good news before maybe we talk about some of the issues we'll be wanting to talk about with the new parliament, is that someone called Marcia de Cordova, who is visually impaired, has won a seat in Battersea for the Labour Party. So obviously we're really pleased about that.
Fantastic news for Marcia. We've spoken with her many times here on R&IB Connect Radio. Indeed, so well done to her for that one. As you say, you know, there are devolved powers around the UK that perhaps complicates things slightly. But do you think this was a bit of an anti-Brexit, anti-austerity vote?
I mean, I have listened to the commentaries, and I definitely think that people are worried about public services, and we're very worried. Just to run through a few of the things we're seeing and we're getting evidence of and people are ringing us about and we need to take action on. So we have horrendous waiting lists for eye care in hospitals, even by the Royal College of Ophthalmology figures, and you can imagine they're quite prudent and cautious. They are saying that people are losing their sight every month due to hospital delays. So we think there's definitely an issue for more spend and more efficiency in NHS eye care services. And we're worried about services to children who are trying to learn in schools and become independent. And of course, poor services for children will affect their life chances, affect their employment. We've got concerns about employment, and we've seen the rate of employment drop for blind and partially sighted people over the last 10 years. And we're worried about vision rehabilitation and social care, where we see really patchy provision, particularly across England and Wales. I think the other big issue for us as we go into Brexit discussions is working with other disability charities to protect the rights and, if possible, improve the rights of disabled people. So all that equality protection that we enjoy, some of it comes from Europe, and we really, really need to hang on to it. And I suppose this result might again help us to have more impact in those discussions.
Now, obviously, these discussions will take place between R&IB and the political parties at the moment. I suppose, in a positive way, having a hung parliament or parties looking to collaborate with each other, and some of these parties will have their own agendas, but perhaps looking to these parties, they may say, you know, they may be more amiable at some of R&IB's requests then, if we don't have an overall majority
definitely. I mean, not only R&IB's request, but, you know, there's over 12 million disabled people in the UK, and all the party manifestos to some extent spoke about making sure disabled people had employment, were treated equally. Some of the manifestos were much better from our point of view in terms of promising some reverses to benefit cuts that we've seen recently. So I think, yes, we will be really looking to making sure the voice of blind and partially sighted people and disabled people more generally are heard, and I think the hung parliament gives us, as I said, more opportunity to do that.
Fazilia, we'll speak with you again in just a moment. We have also with us from R&IB, Hugh Huddy.
I would like to echo what Fazilia is saying. These are my feelings as well. But what we've been doing in parallel to all the excitement and tumult of the political activities and the ramifications of what all these change in power might mean, or the rebalancing of power as it's being described, we've been running Is This the Most Accessible Election Ever? And that's been really interesting. And what I wanted to do was bring you not so much breaking news. It's the best I can do really at the moment to give you an idea of what was yesterday like in terms of accessibility. It's an interesting picture. I think we're seeing some changes, possible positive changes, which is really exciting, because this issue of inaccessible elections has been going on for years and years. And I think this year, this election, the big difference has been the amount of coverage that accessibility has got. Thanks greatly as well to Connect Radio for giving it a great deal of coverage. You know what? What it looks like is a lot of people have gone out to vote, which is great. So the initial signs that we look like we're seeing improvement. For example, on RNIB's social media feed on Twitter last night, we produced a moment, which, if you know what that means a collection of capturing the days, what's happened during the day. And that sort of, in my view, I read it last thing last night, and it looked to me like there was a majority saying positive experiences, were able to vote. And I think some people were saying they enjoyed the process of voting, which is terrific. There were still negatives, though, in there, and I think we mustn't allow the positives, which is great, to sort of run away with the fact that when people, and there were people last night who couldn't vote accessibly. One person from Wandsworth emailed me first thing this morning, very early this morning, to say, last night I tried to vote. The presiding officer apologised straight away as soon as she saw me enter the polling station in Wandsworth because the tactile template, she realised, didn't fit. So I couldn't get a secret vote. There is a positive story coming from Lambeth, which was a terrific experience. Voted, tactile template worked, cast my secret ballot. And I think this is the most marvellous one we had. It came in yesterday afternoon, and it really made us all so pleased. A man saying, I've never thought as a blind person I had a vote. I know this might sound crazy, but I didn't think we really did vote. He went out to vote, and he said, this has changed the way he sees his role in society. That is just the best news ever.
That's fantastic. On a personal point then, Hugh, for your experience, but for my experience, I contacted my local authority to find out where my polling station was, because it's a new area to me, and obviously the polling card's not accessible, so I couldn't read the address off that.
Yep.
But they gave me very good directions, and there was someone waiting outside looking out for me. Now, when I went in, I asked for the template, which I think kind of threw them. Now, bearing in mind this was about 8:30 at night, I think I may have been the first blind person actually to go into the polling station. But they found the tactile template. We went to the polling booth, and the person there read out the candidates and the numbers for me, but had placed the tactile by the side of the voting form instead of placing it underneath. And I had said to him, no, it has to sit on top. Then I lift the window and I know my cross, if you like, is in the box. So they went, oh right, okay, no problem. So you know, to a point it worked extremely well. Still though, again, this was an issue I had in the previous election, was that they didn't actually know how to place the tactile template on the actual ballot paper itself. But I think on the whole, for me, it was a very positive experience.
Your experience, Alan, exactly the same as mine. I voted in Hackney. I went down last night about 6 o'clock. The presiding officer got the tactile template, and then he apologised to say, I don't actually know how to use this. Now, this is not what the Electoral Commission guidance says. They're all supposed to have had training. I had exactly the same experience as you. The template got put on the wrong bit of the ballot paper, got put far over on the left-hand side, and then he didn't know whether I should put my X to the right of those flaps or lift the flap up itself. He didn't know. So I had to tell him what to do. Now, this is what's happening. And the other most important, there's a few other key points I wanted to get across to everyone listening, because, you know, everyone listening has done the most amazing job getting out there. The survey was running very hot, yes, just by about 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon. There were many more responses than we've ever had to that survey. There were something like 120 surveys filled in within 2 hours of the survey going live. We've never had that sort of response before. So it's my worry about the fact that my presiding officer didn't know how to use the template was, how many other blind and partially sighted people out there are doing what we've done, Alan? We're managing, we're almost telling them what to do, when actually it should be the other way around.
Absolutely. Fazili, yourself, good experience?
Well, I feel bad now because I had a postal vote, but next time I'm going to try it out in the polling station, because I feel I should be part of this kind of experience as well. And actually, I've never put the cross on a polling paper myself, so actually I think next time I'll have to follow the example of you and Hugh and get down there.
It is quite an empowering thing, making your mark and placing the ballot paper in the box. So as you say, Hugh, things looking a lot better this time around for the general election. Still some work to do though, but it
That's
doesn't
right.
end there, because you want people now to really get in touch with RNIB to feedback more on that experience to
That's
carry
right.
this forward.
That's right, Alan. I think the takeout from our very small office of, you know, you saw on the telly or on the radio last night, that different media outlets have got their teams of people watching the election as it's panning out. And we were doing that in the campaigns team yesterday at RNIB, watching it panning out from the accessibility point of view. I think the takeouts that we can, all of us who voted or tried to vote yesterday, who are blind and partially sighted, what we can say is pat ourselves on the back for having done a terrific job of being proactive and taking the vote out ourselves, empowering ourselves to go out and make that difference. And I think the takeouts we should say are that we're moving in the right direction, but there is more work to do so that a blind vote equals a secret vote. And I think that's so crucial. We're getting there, everyone. We're nearly there, I think. I think the sense is that we're much more present. And that is fantastic for all of us to be present on the streets and on the polling stations. But
definitely,
the thing that I think we all need to really think about is about the presiding officer I spoke to. And I've had three reports from other colleagues. I said, can you please have a chat with your presiding officer out of the polling station about how many blind people they see in polling stations? And the presiding officers, all four reports I had was they'd never seen a blind person vote in a polling station. What is going on? There are 350,000 blind and partially sighted people eligible to vote in this country. Where are they?
Perhaps as Fazili did the postal vote there. I mean, I think I was the first person, blind person, in my polling station. That was at 8:30, 9 o'clock at night, because they had to go into the boxes and the cupboards to find the actual template itself. Hugh, when you were looking for people to feedback on this, how can they do that?
Well, they can feedback on the survey that we've got on our website. If you go to rnib.org.uk/campaigns, but rnib.org.uk/campaigns, and then on that page there's a link to the survey. But if anyone is worried or finds digital formats difficult, you can phone. You can phone our team. We'll be ready to help you fill in surveys. We'll act as your digital bridge. We'll bridge you and get your form filled out for you online over the phone on 020-7391-2123. I'm sure, Alan, hopefully you'll be able to put that number out again, but we'll get you through to filling in the form, whichever way you want to do it, by voice or whether you want to do it using your screen reader or magnification tools online. Just to reassure, a couple of folks emailed yesterday morning say they were struggling with NVDA to fill in the SurveyMonkey form. I tested it out myself with NVDA as soon as I heard that, and I did notice that NVDA was tending to try and read the whole page at once. And I just hit the escape key, and then that allowed me to navigate by cursor. If anyone has trouble, phone, and we'll give you a hand.
Physically, just finally then, from yourself, we discussed the potential discussions that could take place and the hopes then that RNIB as a charity, and indeed the third sector, could have here with this hung parliament. What's the next steps for yourselves then today?
Well, wait to obviously see what happens in terms of party leadership and forming governments, and the timetable is that the Queen's speech, which contains all the new legislative bills, you know, before last night, that timetable was Parliament would go back on the 13th of June and the Queen's speech would be on the 19th of June. So if that's sort of still happening in that kind of order, what we'd do, not probably a lot today, our role would really kick in once we know what the legislation is for the new government, because then we can really see where the opportunities are, where we have to defend. And as I say, I think we've got a lot more people in that parliament who are going to listen to us and really be on the side of doing the right thing for blind and partially sighted people.
Exciting times ahead then. For the moment then, to Fazili Hadi and Hugh Huddy from RNIB, thanks to both of you for speaking with us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
And you can share your thoughts on the election and in particular the accessibility. I know there was a lot of discussion online about it this week. Lots of you either having really good experiences or really bad experiences. Tell us what you think. You can email theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. Now back to our theme this week. We are saying thank you to our volunteers. Here's Danielle Colcombe again.
I'm here today with Mark in Chester. Now, we've just attended a fundraising event, and Mark is one of our dedicated volunteers, just here to tell us a little bit about what he does. So, do you want to introduce yourself, Mark?
Yeah, I'm Mark Rogerson. I'm 34 and live in St Helens in Merseyside.
Basically, I'm a bit of a runner, really. I do a lot of running events for Darwin IB. I've done 10Ks, half marathons, and I've done two lots of London Marathon, all through the help of a guide runner, because I'm partially blind myself. So that's the sort of thing and the ways I fundraise.
Right, so you exhausted me a little bit with all this energy you've got here. So we'll just sort of go back a little bit. And can you just tell us about how you first got involved with RNIB?
Yeah, I got involved with RNIB. I got diagnosed with some sight loss in my right eye. I lost a peripheral vision in my left eye. So RNIB stepped in about 2013 and basically just gave me the support and the help to carry on. And to thank the charity, we set up a fundraising group and we've been doing the events as I've just previously mentioned.
So what does it mean to you to be a volunteer with RNIB?
Well, being a volunteer, I just want to raise as much money for the charity as I can, really, because I want people to have the same access to the services that I had when I first diagnosed with sight loss. Also, it gives me a feeling of achievement. Some of the things I've done since volunteering, it's given me a real boost, and it's a real positive thing for me. I'm also a volunteer at some sight loss courses and run a few the sessions on the courses, giving people information who are newly diagnosed with sight loss to do with like benefits and also to do with emotional support and practical advice. So I've been starting to do that as well.
So you've actually involved with quite a lot of things with RNIB, and I know that you also volunteer with other organisations as well. So how do you find the time, and how do you prioritise this?
It's quite easy to find the time, to be honest, when it's something you feel quite passionate about. It's something that doesn't take much effort doing. I'm always thinking of ways of raising money. I'm always thinking of ways to do events. I'm always, your brain never really switches off when you're a fundraiser like I am. You're always looking for that one next event for you. I'm trying to get as much money as you can to fundraise.
So you mentioned all the amazing projects that you've been involved in, but is there anything in particular that kind of stands out for you? Any particular achievement that you'd like to mention?
Obviously, the London Marathons, I've done two of them now. They were really, really big for me. I've done two marathons and I still look at my medals and I still don't believe that I've done them. I'm not a runner. I've not got the physique of a runner. I'm quite overweight and really quite lazy, to be honest. So I did really surprise myself that I've managed to run two London marathons. Also, climbing Snowdon as well was a big thing. We assembled a team together. There was a mixture of people, really, of fully sighted people, people with sight loss, and there was one girl who was totally blind as well. We all helped each other to get to the summit, and that was another thing that I really did surprise us that we could do, you know, when we put our mind to it.
What an incredible achievement. I mean, I don't know about anyone listening, but I couldn't run a marathon, so I've got full admiration for you doing that. And in particular, I mean, is it worth mentioning that you've overcome a lot of emotional unrest yourself, having come dealing with your own sight loss issues?
Yeah, I mean, it's fair to say that. I mean, when I first got diagnosed, I didn't really have anyone to speak to about it, because a lot of my family were blaming themselves for it happening. So I couldn't really speak to me family, because I didn't want them to think I couldn't cope. So with me not being able to speak to my family and friends about it, I had to bottle it up, really. So it was quite an emotional time, but again, it comes back to the RNIB's help, you know, and they helped me give me the emotional support that I needed to get all the stuff that was bottled inside. So once that was out of the way, that's where the like the other things started to come into play. You know, we started looking at work, sorting work out for me so I could get to work and make sure I could do a relatively normal job at work. And just things like that, really. So it started with the emotional side, dealing with that one particular problem, and then we started looking at like a lot of the things that were quite important, but not quite as important as me emotional well-being initially. So that's one of the things that the charity did with me.
Would you say that's what motivates you in your role then as a volunteer? Because you've got your own experience of sight loss and you want to support other people.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, that's one of the things I feel passionate about. I mean, I think everybody should have the access to the services that I have. So the fact that I know that a lot of people don't have access to these services, I think it's criminal in a way that people are just left to deal with this sort of thing on their own, and I just don't think it's right. So that's, and again, at the end of the day, I mean, a lot of the time it's down to funding, really, and so that's why I try and fundraise as much as I can to give people opportunities to get the services that I have.
And just giving your time to us, you know, that is absolutely invaluable. I think it needs to be said that without our volunteers, you know, we couldn't provide the services that we do to blind and partially sighted people. So
yeah,
we're taking this opportunity to really thank our volunteers and celebrate the work that you do. So just so you know that the work doesn't go unrecognised.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the time as well, I mean, even if you haven't got any money to give, you know, your time is often more valuable than money to charities. So volunteering for a couple of hours, just doing little, even like a couple of hours collecting with a bucket, or even just something as simple as that, it's a massive help, you know. And the charity do appreciate people donating the time as well as the money.
So what's your experience with RNIB being a volunteer directly with them? Have you been supported?
Yeah, I mean, everything I've ever done with RNIB, there's been the support there. The majority of the volunteering I do is fundraising at the minute, so I'm kind of doing a lot of fundraising, so the fundraising team are always there for me, and if ever need anything, you know, for any of the events, they're always there. I need to give them a call and they'll be there and they'll drop it off, you know, whatever it is that I need, you know, buckets or collection tins or anything like that sort of thing. So it's always...
Have you got any plans for the future?
Well, I've been roped into doing the London Marathon again next year, so 2018 I'm doing that. I'm trying to inspire a few others to sign up as well to London Marathon. Like I say, I am partially sighted. I do run with a guide runner, so you know, anybody else that may be partially sighted and they do like running, you know, maybe get in touch with the events team. You know, it's an amazing experience, and I would recommend anybody to get involved if that's your sort of thing. I know it's not for everybody, but if you like your running and you think you could run a marathon and you want to experience that, then my advice would be to just go for it. I think you should.
Wise words there. Just to finish, I wonder if you've got any words of advice for anyone who's thinking about volunteering, but they might be faced with some challenges, in particular the blind and partially sighted community. What would you say to those people who maybe want to get involved in volunteering?
Yeah, I mean, get involved. You automatically, after you've volunteered for something, you automatically feel at the end of it like a sense of achievement. And it, again, a lot of the time, you know, it's really something positive for you to do, and it just something small like volunteering, like at a small event, you know, for a couple of hours, it gives you so much back. So I would recommend that. And like I said, the support's always there. Doesn't necessarily matter about any disabilities that you may have. You know, there's always things that you can do, and the charity are always grateful of people to volunteer in any way, shape or form.
Thank you so much, Mark, and thank you personally for all of the really hard work that you've put into raising, is it £15,000?
Yeah.
Fantastic work, thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Barbara Weiner.
So Barbara, why were you interested in doing volunteering for RNIB?
I'm very interested in what you're organising, what you're doing, and I thought I could help by raising awareness and doing some public speaking, which is what my background is from business, and I thought it would be useful.
And how much public speaking have you done so far with RNIB?
So I've done hundreds of presentations on a fairly extensive basis, if you like, and I've done it with lots of organisations. So for RNIB, I'm very new, so I'm looking forward to doing that, and again, to raise awareness.
Which areas are you volunteering at the moment? So are you based in London?
Or? I'm based in London, so I'm in Waterloo, so I'm pretty good for access in most places. Yeah.
And you said you wanted to work for sort of charity like RNIB. What was it that motivated or inspired you to come work with Sight Loss Charity? Was it just wanting to volunteer?
No, there is a wanting of volunteering in somewhere where you can use your skills, but I really have a passion for reading, and I think one of the things that gets to me is if I lost that ability, that would be really tragic, you know. And so I kind of get the books, and I want to be a part of helping with the books. Yeah.
And so is the talk, I suppose, maybe actually getting someone signed up to take on a talking book, because that's kind of an achievement to work.
To me, that would be a real achievement, is to get that done, and particularly with children books, I think. But, you know, either way, it's important. So I think that would be just brilliant. And also, you know, the ability to allow somebody to be able to put their name to that and to have something that they can say, I put my name to a talking book and it's going to be there forever, I think it's a great thing for somebody else. So it's really good. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Great to hear you this week talking about the things you're doing as volunteers, and that is exactly what this week is all about here on the Weekly Connect. Thank you to everyone who's taken part in the programme as well, and those who provided audio. If you wanted to send us some audio, there's some really useful hints and tips on our podcast on how to do that. You can go to the Weekly Connect podcast, search for the Features podcast, and that'll let you find out interesting ways to record using your smartphone. Maybe you've got an issue you'd like to share, then you can do it simply by recording it into your phone and sending it to us. Doesn't matter whether you've got an iPhone or an Android or anything else, even an iPad, you can do it all there. And the email address to send it to, dead easy, theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
So, I'm here today at Crewe Hall with one of our wonderful volunteers, Anne. Would you like to introduce yourself, Anne?
Hello, I'm Anne Hanford, and I'm a volunteer for RNIB.
So, we'll talk a little bit about why we're here today first, because it's quite interesting how you got involved with RNIB, isn't it? So I'll just let everyone know that we're at the National Stroke Assembly today, and we're here exhibiting some RNIB information, and we're thinking about setting up some partnership work with Stroke Association, aren't we? And in particular, supporting people who experience sight loss after stroke. So would you like to tell me a little bit about how you got involved in, specifically in stroke projects?
I got involved in stroke projects because I actually experienced a stroke myself in 2011, and I had sight difficulties following on from that, and I actually received a lot of my support following that from the RNIB, and I was really grateful for the support that I received, and eventually wanted to give something back. The second part of it was that I lost lots and lots of my skills as a result of my stroke, and as well as wanting to give something back, the selfish part of me actually wanted an opportunity to develop or to redevelop some of the skills that I'd lost, and volunteering gave me an opportunity to do that as well.
Now, you mentioned that that's a selfish thought, but actually I feel that's one of the main benefits of getting into volunteering, and so you also mentioned that you're
you wanted to give something back. Is that what inspires you to then give your time up for free?
Yes. The thought of giving something does, but actually it's a symbiotic process because, yes, I get it. I like the thought that I'm giving something, but in truth I'm getting lots from it as well, in that it's really lovely to be part of something, to belong, to feel that you belong somewhere, to actually join in with other people. That's a really good part of being a volunteer.
And we've met some incredible people today here at Crewe Hall at the Stroke Association assembly. So is connecting people something that's connecting with people important to you?
Very. And I think it's important to other people that have suffered strokes or any kind of sight loss. Connecting with other people is really important. It was important to me at the time I needed it, so I know that firsthand, and I continue to know it from the people that I meet up with.
And we're here representing our Connect team, aren't we? So in terms of building those relationships with people, is that something that supported you through your difficult times, would you say?
Yes, it is. It's really important to be able to connect with other people, sometimes who have similar experiences to yourself, or maybe very different experiences, but just to be able to connect in different ways, whether it by telephone or electronically, or just to read other people's experiences. However, it's just important to be able to connect with other people.
What difference would you say that you make being a volunteer?
I don't know. I'd like to think if I just perhaps give somebody a bit of company in a day that they wouldn't have otherwise had, or maybe even a smile that they wouldn't have otherwise experienced, then that's good enough.
Well, you certainly put a smile on my face. Without you, I'd be very lonely at these events, and I very much appreciate your time. And I think that's what we're here to celebrate, really, the fact that Volunteers Week is it's a time for us to actually to recognise that the work that volunteers do is integral to the organisation, and we couldn't do it without you. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
If there was anyone out there listening who was thinking maybe that they were slightly reluctant to maybe get involved with charity work or volunteering, what would you say to those people?
I would say go for it. You get far more back than you give. It really is a symbiotic experience, and it's really fun to do.
Fantastic. Thank you.
And thank you to everyone who got in touch and told us about being a volunteer. And thank you to the wonderful team at RNIB who got out there this weekend, put microphones in front of people's faces to say, right, why did you become a volunteer? All of you answering beautifully. Thank you for your time on that. Just a quick note before we go. We got an email in from Irene this week. And this follows on from a show a couple of weeks ago where we had Liz Franklin on asking about getting a group together around the subject of astronomy. Well, this is definitely something Irene's keen to do. She says it's excellent to hear fellow quote-unquote astronomy heads who are looking for like-minded individuals. Being one of them myself, I spent some time recently scratching my head trying to find ways of enjoying astronomy without relying on sight. If you could put me into contact with Miss Franklin, I would really appreciate that. Well, that's exactly what we've done. Thank you for that email, Irene, and thank you for getting in touch. The email address to do that is theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. So sure, you want to talk about something? This is the platform to do it. Remember, if it's Mondays from 1, it is the Weekly Connect. Thank you for listening. See you next week.